responsible AI equals ethics plus governance plus safety. And so our thinking is a system can't be deemed responsible unless it is ethical, well-governed, and safe.
Welcome to the Chief AI Officer Podcast,
where AI meets leadership.
And here is your host, Sanjay Puri.
Welcome to the CAIO Podcast, where we delve deep into the world of Chief AI Officers, exploring their journeys, insights, and challenges in steering AI initiatives within their organizations. Welcome to the CAIO Podcast, where we dive deep into the world of artificial intelligence with the leaders who are shaping its future. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we have an exceptional guest with us, Jeff Schaefer. Jeff is the head of responsible AI at Booz Allen Hamilton and the firm's chief AI ethics advisor. He also serves on the board of trustees at the Washington Center and has a distinguished background in both the intelligence community and the financial sector. Jeff's work on responsible AI has been widely recognized and featured in prestigious publications such as MIT Technology Review and Fast Company. His insights and contributions to the field are invaluable, and today we are thrilled to have him share his experiences and vision with us. Jeff, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us today. Could you please share with our audience a brief overview of your career journey, a little bit about Booz Allen Hamilton, because of we have a global audience of different hues, different backgrounds, so they would like to know. And tell them a little bit about your current role at Booz.
That's perfect. It's really good to be here. Thank you for having me on. Career journey is a little bit eclectic. You know, it started as an accident, and then it became a little purposeful. And then when I came back to Booz Allen in 2019, I became really focused on AI and responsible AI. But I started in the intel community doing counterintelligence work, financial intelligence as an analyst, really interesting stuff. I started at the FBI, worked for a few different agencies. Then sort of evolved into doing IT strategy and more tech roadmap development in the IC before making a left-hand turn into finance. Worked at Bridgewater for a while, doing tech security and all sorts of risk management type work for technology and security. Was the acting chief security officer for a crypto startup back when that was cool. And then did some really interesting work at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and applied critical thinking. Before moving back to DC, sort of pivoting into the field of AI and really falling in love with responsible AI, the big ethical questions, how we develop this technology that really can facilitate our human flourishing and take us to the next level. So that's the eclectic journey. And it's really good to be doing this work now at Booz. And as you mentioned, Chief AI Ethics Advisor, and that brings a sort of a unique spin to this as well. And so, you know, working with clients across our sectors, civil, defense and intelligence, as well as some of our commercial work. As you can imagine, the ethical questions for AI are fairly different in each of those spaces. And so we're constantly facing interesting problems with different ethical calculus, different moral calculus. So it keeps things pretty interesting and busy right now.
Great. Jeff, I'm in your backyard, so I know Booz pretty well, but we have audiences, as I said, very global, very different. Tell them a little bit about what Booz does for its clients and what does it do?
Sure. We're 110 years old. We just celebrated our 110th anniversary. We are the largest federal contractor in history in the U.S. So like 97-ish% of our business is with the U.S. government. We have a little bit of a practice in the commercial sector, really focused around cybersecurity, now increasingly AI and AI security as well. But we focus on the whole breadth of the U.S. government, you know, from CDC to the Defense Department, Postal Service, et cetera. If you can name a federal agency, we support them. And it's in a huge range of work. It's increasingly tech-focused. AI practice, it is growing like gangbusters right now. We just passed over 1,000 folks. Cybersecurity, secure AI, classic change management strategy work, et cetera. We really span the gamut. It's a lot of fun.
Great. Jeff, you made some very important points that I want to dig into. One is, obviously, I want to give you a little bit of the vision which I shared for this podcast. One is to inspiring others who want to follow in your footsteps. There are a lot of people who say, hey, I want to grow up to be Jeff, or I want to follow in his footsteps. Others who are part of your community, who are similar, who want to learn from successes you've had or mistakes or challenges. And the third is, this is also a chance and opportunity for you to brag. Now, one thing I want to point to our listeners, our global listeners, Jeff and Boos have a 1,000-person AI team, and that's saying a lot in this war on AI talent. They have been able to recruit and hire, and we're going to get much more deeper into it. Jeff, one thing you said, and this is for our listeners, that you had a very, very different, interesting background. You've been in a crypto startup. You've been in finance. You were at the Federal Reserve, IT strategy. Do you think for a role like this, and this is for our listeners who are trying to follow in your footsteps, do you think that has helped you, or it's just as an accident and, you know, in the current role that you are, do you think that is a help?
It's funny. It was an accident that became just a gigantic help. And what I mean by that is this. One of the things we talk about in Responsible AI is that the governance questions, the ethical questions, the safety questions, all of those dimensions happen at the use case level. And so using a particular AI system to solve a particular challenge with one particular client, that's going to have a very different sort of ethical calculus or governance, set of governance challenges than an AI application in a different space for a different problem set. And so the more diversity in your background, your experience, where you've worked, what you've thought about, the different skills that you've had, the more insight you're going to bring to bear on these wildly varying and diverse use case challenges. And so, you know, if you come from a healthcare background, plenty of work for you to do. You know, the application of AI and the ethical dimensions of that in that space is endless. If you come from a defense background, you obviously have plenty of work to do, and your experience is going to lend extra insight to that unique space. And so I feel really grateful. I mean, it's been a really fun and interesting career journey. In every aspect of that, every left-hand turn, every right-hand turn has really added a new dimension to my thinking when I go to work every day now and really try to tackle these problems with hugely different clients on a daily basis.
Well, that's great. So for our listeners, having a diverse background or, you know, across the field or et cetera, I think is a big opportunity, according to Jeff, which I think is a very, very important point. Jeff, Boos Allen has been, you know, as you've just talked about, had been at the forefront of AI adoption and innovation. Can you tell our listeners some of the key focus areas for AI that it contributes to your overall strategy?
So I think we've had an AI practice for a while now, and it's evolved in all sorts of different ways, as you can imagine. But really, when the executive order came out in the U.S. government, we really said that was the starting gun. The supplementary OMB implementation guidance is the race course. And so every agency, I mean, the executive order, it's over 100 pages. There's so many different requirements and guardrails, et cetera, that it calls out for the government. A couple of the key things it says are basically every agency needs to have a strategy, an AI strategy. Every agency, as you know well in this podcast, needs to have a chief AI officer. And they need to pull together a vision for how AI is going to turbocharge the mission of each of these agencies and allow them to do their work better, to take on more, to solve challenges in new and different ways. And at the end of the day, at the highest level, our practice, our AI practice is oriented around those things. How can we help build, develop, support, govern, et cetera, all sorts of different AI projects, work systems to facilitate those strategies, to help agencies apply AI in really novel ways for their unique mission sets. And so as you can imagine, that's a huge range of work, you know, from the most advanced frontier models and generative AI systems to very, very classic sort of cybersecurity protections around the tech stacks that support those systems, support that work. And so we actually have a new operating concept called the AI stacks, and we have six of them. You know, Responsible AI is one of them. But we have one for generative, cyber AI, secure AI, vision AI, which is a really particular set of use cases that are very, very interesting, and now quantum AI. So as you can imagine, again, the range spans quite a bit, and you know what the quantum team is working on in any given day for their clients, it's going to be vastly different than what the vision team's focused on. But one of the things that's really exciting about Lightwork and our team's work around responsible AI is we're really a horizontal across all of that. And so what are the ethical dimensions of using quantum computing for certain AI applications? You know, that's a unique body of work unto itself. So we really span across what the full AI practice is doing, and that work is hugely diverse.
Well, that's fantastic. A lot of more questions on that. For our listeners, you are the chief of the head of responsible AI for Booz. Can you define for our listeners, what does responsible AI mean to Jeff? Because there are some variations of responsible AI for people. I mean, we've had experts come in, but let's hear from you what responsible AI means to you.
It's a good question. You know, we thought about this a lot because so many different terms have come in and out of vogue over the years. This really all started with AI ethics, ethical AI, became responsible AI. But you'll also hear AI governance, trustworthy AI, et cetera. But for us, we got a lot of questions early on about the difference between responsible AI and ethical AI. So we really focused there. And at first, we ourselves thought, well, basically the same thing. You know, we can conflate those. That's okay. But we kept getting the question because it wasn't a good answer. And we realized, no, actually, these are different. And so we came up with a formula that we call our regs formula. Responsible AI equals ethics plus governance plus safety. And so our thinking is a system can't be deemed responsible unless it is ethical, well-governed, and safe. That formulaic approach we found has really helped clarify a bunch of things. One of the ways we think about it is that equation can and should be balanced differently for different AI projects and use cases and scenarios. So you can imagine one of the examples we use often is computer vision. The computer vision system used to unlock your phone is going to have a very different ethical calculus than a computer vision system in a surveillance apparatus. You may govern those things in the exact same way, but then the safety implications of each of those are going to be radically different as well. And so you can see how each one of those variables has its own valence, has its own considerations, and allows us to make more finely grained, more practical decisions for responsible AI risk assessments, for adoption strategies, why we would use an AI system for a particular application, but not another one. It allows us to what's called by the Jesuits, descend into the particulars. So the more detail and complexity we grapple with, the more nuanced an understanding we'll have and the better decisions we'll be able to make about these things.
So Jeff, for our audience, there are three aspects to it. One is ethics, one's governance, and one is safety. As far as how your definition is, it's a pretty comprehensive. Now, what you're saying, if I'm understanding you correctly, there could be different elements based on the use cases. Generally, these are the three components that you see from a responsible AI perspective. When you are dealing with clients and you talk about this, as you talked about the chief AI officers, and we're going to have, and we've had some on the show, how receptive are they to this message? Because this is still relatively new. They have been put in this position because of this executive order. Is this something they're already bought into? This is for existing chief AI officers who are in the same role, maybe on the commercial side, trying to evangelize this.
Yeah. No, it's a good question. I'd answer in a couple of different ways. I'd say, you know, by and large, again, we call this our regs formula. You know, when we talk about regs, we see light bulbs turn on. You know, it helps bring clarity, helps bring a framework to thinking about an issue and a topic that is ethereal, philosophical, often not considered to be very practical, tangible, or useful. And so having this more formulaic approach brings a systemization to it that I think a lot of people get intuitively and appreciate. That said, you know, everyone has a unique way of thinking about this space. People use, as we discuss, different terms. And by and large, I think that's okay. You know, what brings clarity to someone's AI governance work, the responsible AI strategies and guardrails, I think is good and should be doubled down on and leveraged. We really love the regs framework. It has helped brought clarity to our own work and thinking. But by and large, when you're talking about making systems and applications ethical, safe, governed well, and according to an agency's principles and policies, however you want to approach that, whatever terms you want to use, I think that's good. So, you know, we happen to have our favorite one, but that doesn't mean it's the only one.
Right. The other question I wanted to ask, Jeff, is Booz is spread out in almost every government agency, or probably is already in every government agency. Do you see more receptiveness in DOD, IC, civilian, or is it just across the board?
It really is across the board. It's actually fantastic to see. As you can imagine, what the intelligence community versus, say, the Postal Service or the FDA is thinking about and concerned about and is focused on is really different. But by and large, everyone is focused, they're excited, they have purpose, thanks in part to the executive order, but by no means exclusively due to that. And you just see a beehive of activity across the federal space. You know, we've been thinking a lot about how astonishing it is that, you know, from ChatGPT to the initial AI Insight Forum in the Senate, talking about how we think about this technology, how we need to govern and regulate it, et cetera. That has to have been, you know, the quickest from 0 to 60 whole of government response that we've ever seen. And so I think, you know, the all sources classic stereotypes about the government, we're not seeing any of them at work. Kyles are being appointed every other day. Strategies are coming together for all sorts of really critical missions across the defense, intelligence, and civil space that need AI, that agencies are focused on applying AI to in the best and smartest ways. So it's everywhere, and it's really exciting because the use cases are so diverse.
That's a fantastic thing, because usually, Jeff, it's the commercial world that sets the pace for the government. Maybe it's this time for a change, and maybe the government might be setting the pace for the commercial space. Who knows? But at least they're going neck to neck. Jeff, one of the points you made before, I want to come back. You said you're horizontal across everything that goes across. Do you, in your role or your team, ever interface directly with clients, or is it your clients are internal within Booz?
One thing to think about is, you know, we, the responsible AI team, are fairly small, you know, not only within the context of our 1,000-person strong AI practice, but Booz Allen is 35,000 people and growing. So given how fast AI is moving, given how fast our clients are moving, and how many requirements, again, from the executive order OMB that they're responsible for delivering against between now and end of the year and then beyond, we've really taken this dual-pronged approach. So it's kind of key to our strategy. There are certain problem sets, certain client challenges in relationships that make total sense for us to be driving directly and supporting directly. And that's a small ecosystem of clients in work that, again, is really well aligned to sort of the high power team that we have. And then, but we realize at the same time that this work, again, is blossoming across the entire federal government kind of all at once. And so there's no way that we can scale to meet that demand, to meet those mission needs, if it was just our small team trying to facilitate all of that work. And so we have a maturity model, and the bottom rung we call L1. So maturity level one. And this, there's a whole strategy wrapped around that. And so in the L1 body of work, we're really focused on developing capabilities and enablement to help our 35,000 employees go scale this work in their own sort of novel client spaces with their own unique team in way of approaching those client spaces. And we're finding that not only is that by and large a successful way to kind of cover all the bases at once, so to speak, but it's just simply necessary. And as you can imagine, each body of work, you know, us supporting clients directly and us building tools and capabilities to enable the AI practice and the rest of Booz Allen to go do this work, each of those bodies of work looks really different, but each one is fun and unique in its own way, you know, enabling teams to turn on that light bulb and really understand how they can bring this, all the capabilities we've developed to their clients is a whole separate joy and set of challenges than when we go and working with clients directly ourselves. So dual hat, dual prong strategy, trying to scale as fast as we can.
Now, Jeff, as you said, you have a 1,000-person team and, you know, responsible AI is part of it. How do the rest of the team look at this? I mean, is they consider it a necessary evil or it's a strategic advantage? Because, you know, they want to get solutions done. They want to do machine learning, deep learning. They want to do RAG and all those other deep tech stuff. And here you come in talking about the three-leg stool of ethics, governance, safety. So what is their reaction?
It's a good question. So we're AI optimists. We're on the record firmly as being AI optimists. We believe in AI. We're excited about AI. We see our clients feel the same. And so we don't want to be the department of no. We don't believe in slowing this work down. We don't believe it's necessary to do it safely and responsibly. So we take that as inspiration for our product development and our client engagements. And so what are the things that we can build that make this easy as possible? Again, we call this practical, tangible, and useful. We don't want to come pontificate and point out all of the things that you're doing wrong or all of the guardrails that you haven't put in place yet. It's not helpful. It's not satisfying. And it gets us farther away from the mission of bringing AI to where it's needed most. So instead, we want to deeply understand, what are you trying to do with it? And how can we help do that safely, but at the speed of your requirements, at the speed of mission, at the speed of change, frankly? So that's one way we approach it. Another way is, we talk about this a lot. If you imagine the classical philosophers from Greece to China, they weren't as concerned about the question of right versus wrong. They were really more concerned about what it means to live a good life. And so Aristotle termed this eudaimonia, which roughly translates to flourishing and happiness. If you take a really classical view on responsible AI and AI ethics, you open up the aperture for what AI work is considered responsible. AI systems that are advancing medical diagnostics, rare disease treatments, safety and civil engineering, new drug discovery, et cetera, all of those stand the chance of radically enhancing human flourishing. And those are systems that we would consider responsible. So not only do we not want to be coming into client spaces and saying, you're doing this wrong, you need to slow down, these are all of the stop signs or the yield signs you need to put in place. We also want to be looking at the use cases where we can use AI to really drive human flourishing. And I think that's really interesting and helpful when we think about broader AI strategy and what agencies should and could be doing with AI that they're not thinking about currently today. And all of that, you know, we have capabilities to do that responsibly so that we are helping facilitate AI work that is safe, ethical, and well-governed. But we always have that lens of how can we do that without slowing down the really important and necessary work that needs to be done.
So making sure the work doesn't slow down. Jeff, what are some of the misconceptions generally you encounter about responsible AI or AI ethics as you are engaging either with clients or internally?
I think it's almost the inverse of what I was just saying, which is it is meant to be so focused on risk that good responsible AI means doing less AI. It's just simply the opposite. Doing more AI can be done responsibly and at scale, and focusing on, again, how do we balance that regs equation so we understand the ethical calculus, we understand how to govern different systems and different environments for different missions, and how do we make all of that safe where we're providing almost an easy button. So much of the thought and innovation that we're trying to drive goes into solving that equation well, so that when we get to a client challenge or an engagement, we're able to bring basically an easy button so that we have the right guardrails instantiated, we have the right flows and processes wrapped around that to facilitate all of this as easily as possible. So I think to kind of frame all that up, I think one of the biggest misconceptions about responsible AI is we are not focused enough on driving innovation responsibly. We are not focused on enabling AI strategies responsibly. We're simply pointing out all the ways that it shouldn't be done or can't be done, et cetera. And I think that that really misses all of the collective innovation across the field that's going into doing this work well, simply, easily, and more effectively.
So, you know, you want to make sure more AI is done, but done responsibly, I think is what you're saying. Jeff, we've had CIOs of large Fortune 500 companies, and they talk about how their companies have set up ethics boards or ethics committees, et cetera. Is the government doing something like that, or is that something you are helping the government do, or is that part of NIST has this whole safety thing, et cetera? Tell our listeners a little bit about how the government is approaching this.
So the simple answer is yes. As you can imagine, different governance boards are being constructed and managed and focusing on different things in different ways. But I think we're seeing a broad insight, which is some version of that thing, that capacity is really helpful. And so I think now what we're seeing, particularly post-executive order, is the calibration of what an AI governance board or AI ethics committee should look like, how they should manage collectively or individually different issues across their AI ecosystem, which things should rise up to the level of an AI governance board, which should not, what are the criteria behind that? So I think that's where the work is now. One thing that we're starting to see that's encouraging, one thing that we'd love to see even more is more inclusion from folks that are at the ground floor, so to speak, on these boards. And so end users, AI system developers, folks that are even a little divorced from the day-to-day AI development or use, but are secondary or tertiary to its impact. Having more of those voices on the board helps surface issues and helps understand and bring a level of nuance to these issues that simply just drives better decision-making. And so I think that's one of the things that, again, we'd love to see even more and are focusing on a lot ourselves internally at Booz Allen is how do we bring the end users, the stakeholders who have the most and the deepest insight about this work to bear on these AI governance decisions. And I think that is going to see even more success as that develops further.
Well, that's great to know. Jeff, you know, a lot of conversations with CIOs that talk about AI bias and fairness. How are you approaching these issues? What measures are in place to make sure there is ethical AI development as you work with different agencies?
I think two answers. I think in general, well, the more general one first is it's use case dependent. Again, you want to descend into the particulars. And so when you're talking about fairness, fairness for whom? To what degree? How do we calibrate that? What do good outcomes look like that we need to drive towards? And how do we reverse engineer that either in the construction and the weighting of our AI models or in the way that outputs are delivered or constructed or feedback mechanisms for end users who are the subject of decisions either made in whole or in part by AI? So I think in general, the more specificity and complexion you can wrap around those questions, the better decisions you're going to make. More specifically, bias, I think, is really interesting. We're not, I think, yet thinking about bias in the right way. And so that adage, you know, never waste a good crisis. I think, you know, we humans are just filled with bias ourselves. You know, most of it, thankfully, is implicit and non-malicious. Some of it, of course, is discriminatory, but all of it is complex. A lot of it is non-obvious, how it surfaces or does it or manifests throughout society. And one example we talk about is at one point in time, we didn't realize that zip codes were a proxy for race. We just didn't know that. Maybe we should have. But at some point, we got a bunch of data together in one place, and that correlation became really clear. Now, that's important because we, of course, haven't solved the problem, but we now, in public policy, there's a term that's basically like really effective policymaking requires more direct interventions. More direct interventions requires more detailed insight about how a particular problem is triggered, how it manifests across different geographies or demographic groups. And only then can we develop the right policy interventions that will have any chance of effectiveness. And so in some ways, I view AI as the greatest public policymaking tool that's ever been invented, because it is so great at surfacing so much of the bias that's just latent and inherent across society with such specificity and context and nuance that it actually affords us as an opportunity to solve those issues with greater and more effective policy interventions. Now, that still requires us to act and to have courage in the face of challenging conversations and historical discrimination. So, it's not easy, but I think if we look at all of the different ways that AI is surfacing greater insight about the societal problems that we've long faced, the new ones that are popping up every day, that's actually a gift that allows us to actually now tackle those with renewed vigor and effectiveness. And I think AI's role in that should be harnessed and leveraged to its fullest degree.
Well, that's a great perspective, that it is the greatest public policy tool to harness against biases and discrimination. Jeff, you talked about the three pegs in responsible AI, safety being one of them. Now, data, obviously, we talk about being the lifeblood of AI. So how do you help your clients navigate data security and privacy concerns? But they're working with such huge amounts of data, IRS, DOD, VA, et cetera. Tell our listeners, how are you doing it? Tell some of your colleagues here who are listening.
So, it's not remarkable. It's 101. It's back to basics. It's great cybersecurity controls and practices. It's good data hygiene, a lot of boring stuff. At the same time, we have a really advanced research under our secure AI stack in adversarial AI threat vectors, controls, and protections. We have a bunch of PhDs on that team that are literally working at the vanguard of the field to understand how those threat vectors and threat actors are evolving, how that sometimes starts at the data level and what that looks like, but also the broader threat surface that is evolving or evolving in new and very complex ways. So our cyber AI team is involved in that work, et cetera. So without getting into any of the secret sauce, of course, we have a really broad-based approach that spans the, do good cyber and data hygiene practices and work all the way through the most advanced levels of adversarial AI with a team that is actually literally publishing in the fields. It's multivariate, it's really interesting, and it's only becoming more important. As you said, we have agencies that either have national secrets or citizen data, PII, PHI, et cetera, that needs to be protected and stewarded really responsibly. And so that's a whole distinct body of work that we take really seriously.
Well, that's great and very helpful to some of your colleagues who are listening. One of the questions that concerns in a recent survey, the Fortune 500 CEOs were asked about AI, is the return on investment. And I talked to all the CIOs, and they, each of them, given their use cases, have talked about tangible ROI and intangible ROI. Explain to me, whether it's internal or for your clients, how are you defining ROI, and what is your experience with ROI? Because that's a big debate, hey, so much money is going into AI and this NVIDIA chips, talent, et cetera. But I'm sure you have some great feedback for our C-level execs who are listening to you.
So I'll answer sort of indirectly, because this is something we're thinking about a lot. Our contention is AI, but particularly generative AI, is not a top-down technology, it's a bottoms-up one. And right now, our inclinations, our habits, our preferences are frameworks for how to think about a new technology and how to roll it out is top down. It's enterprise. It is classical, you know, IT application development and adoption. And AI, again, particularly generative AI, is really augmentative and powerful at an individual level because of its emergent behavior, because of our own idiosyncrasies and how we use it and leverage it, how we literally prompt it, and the outputs of the systems once we put in those prompts and converse with it. And so really, when we think about how to get the most value out of AI, I think putting it into the hands of as many of your employees as possible and let them figure out the best ways that AI can turbocharge their work, make it more efficient, make it more effective, help augment and drive the opening up of new bodies of work for your organization. I think that's where we're going to see the most success. And so some of our work is focused on how do we devolve down into the employee base, the right sort of responsible AI guardrails in this final mile kind of way, so that we empower users of these systems to be safe, to be ethical, and to have that be well governed in this sort of centralized way without making them use AI through centralized means, if that makes sense. And so I think it's a little bit of a paradox, because I think it makes total sense to have Kaios. It makes total sense to have an AI office or center of excellence or Booz Allen's own organization, a 1,000-person AI team. But that doesn't mean all of the work should or must happen with that team in that sort of centralized capacity. You know, so much of this value that we're going to derive and extract from AI is going to happen at the end user level, with employees using it in ways we never would have imagined, and therefore could never have pulled them to use it in those ways to derive that value. So I think it's not quite a wait and see approach, but really paying attention to how employees are using it to do their jobs differently and better and to open up new levels of creativity and strategy, I think is something that we should really focus on the remainder of this year and the next year, to see the ways that AI is already transforming our organizations and how we work and do our work, and what ways we can facilitate that better to extract that ROI. And I think in a year or so, we're going to learn a ton about how the most advanced AI models that we're still trying to figure out how to actually, you know, get into our enterprises without our data being leaked or compromised in some way. We're going to learn a lot about the best ways to use those for different functions, from HR to finance, et cetera. And I think doing that in a systematic way, while recognizing that most of the insight and the value is going to come from the bottom up, I think is the right way to approach the ROI question.
Great answer. Bottom-up approach, enabling all the people in your organization to engage with AI, doing it in responsible governance, structured manner, but letting them feel it out. And you said the next 6 months to a year is going to tell us a lot about what this technology can do and where the ROI is going to come. That's very, very helpful, especially to our listeners who are thinking about ROI on a constant basis. Jeff, want to talk a little bit for our listeners, some of the questions that came in that would help you add to that 1,000-person team, because they're looking to see what opportunities entail for them at Booz Allen. Talk a little bit about the culture there. Is there a culture of innovation, experimentation at Booz? And do you encourage your teams to push some boundaries? That's one of the questions that came in from our listeners.
That's a great question. So I think, you know, in the early part of this conversation, I alluded to the fact that this is the second time I've been at Booz Allen. So I came back to the firm for a reason. I love it here. I think, you know, I've worked at a lot of fantastic organizations, and I came back to this one for a reason. We're hugely people focused. The relationships here are strong, critical, rewarding, fulfilling. I'm constantly amazed at the level of talent that we have in the AI practice and beyond. They're attracted to our organization and the mission, but I mean, some of the talent that we have in our ranks is just extraordinary. And I think one of the reasons why that talent is here is because we almost call this like choose your own adventure pathway. So, you know, I raised my hand back in 2019, said, I'm really interested in this stuff. I want to work on AI ethics. And, you know, long story short, I built a practice and now have the privilege of leading this body of work for the firm. That was a choose my own adventure. You have people publishing in journals, speaking at conferences on the really interesting and advanced work that they're doing in all sorts of spaces. And Booz Allen facilitates that, creates a safe space to do that research, encourages it, facilitates it. And in some ways, we consider it necessary to keep ahead of the mission requirements that our agencies face. You know, if we're not out on the bleeding edge, how can we lead? How can we advise? How can we be a trusted advisor? We have to be out there at the vanguard, you know, working to shape the field, to understand the field, to bring capabilities back from the bleeding edge and make them relevant and valuable to our clients. And you can only do that with great people that are given the freedom to research, to experiment, to fail, to try, to do. And I think we have a really, really healthy culture of that, particularly in our CTO practice where the AI team sits, but just across the entire company. And that's been facilitated on down from our CEO, Horacio. And you really feel that kind of alive every single day. And our whole strategy vault is built around that velocity, leadership, technology. So it's almost literally baked into our DNA. So I would say for folks that are wondering, what am I going to do at a giant government contractor? I would say basically anything you want.
Wow. So choose your own adventure pathway. That's great. Jeff, is there opportunity for diversity of thought and inclusion in the team? And why is it important, if in your view, for driving innovation?
So absolutely. It's something I take really seriously. And actually, to circle back to your question earlier about, you know, was my eclectic background an asset or a liability? I think it was an asset. I realized, or I learned over the years, how valuable different ways of thinking, different experiences are to problem solving. I actually put together a syllabus for a class that I almost taught at a university in DC called Extreme Thinking for Extreme Problems. And it was focused on Renaissance thinking, you know, from Da Vinci to some of the modern folks leading some of our most advanced technological innovations in the field right now. You know, how eclectic their backgrounds and thought processes were, how diverse the teams and the people that they brought around them were, maybe less so back in the Renaissance, but certainly now, you know, the diversity of experiences and thinking is just critical. I have probably four generations on my team. I have folks from all different backgrounds and client experiences, professional and private sector experiences. And almost literally every day, can we feel what a difference it makes in understanding problems and therefore offering the right solution? So it's necessary, it's exciting, and it's frankly just more fulfilling to work with such a diverse group of folks.
One question came in was, are there opportunities for upskilling, reskilling, education for folks in this fast, very fast moving AI world, moves almost on a daily basis, RAG, multimodal, you name it, it's out there.
So it's funny, every Friday, I'm part of a working group that's talking about how we build out the responsible AI modules and learning pathway for our AI Aware program. We take upskilling really, really seriously at the firm. We have a whole series of AI modules, again, called AI Aware, but they're different modules and learning pathways within that umbrella program that are open to the entire firm, including the AI practice itself. It's a wildly successful program. I've been through a number of those modules myself. I love it. That team is fantastic. And it has a near infinite amount of support from the top on down, because we realize that, again, if we're going to advise and really do meaningful work, we need to stay at the front of the pack. And that includes education and upskilling. So as you can imagine, that program can't do everything, but we do also, again, take a more systematic approach to ensuring that we have the right skills by and large as the field is advancing and everyone has access to that.
Well, that's great. So lots of opportunities for reskilling, upskilling at Booz with Jeff. Jeff, towards the end, we want to do just some fun lightning round of questions where if you can give us a one word, in your case, we might make an exception. Maybe we'll have two words. But just to get a sense of where you and Booz are at. So are you ready for it?
Love lightning rounds.
Okay. Jeff, for our audience of AI hacks, GPUs or TPUs?
These got to be GPUs.
Okay. Let's make it spicier. Python or R?
I think it's got to be Python.
TensorFlow or PyTorch?
I plead the fifth.
Okay. Cloud or on-prem?
For our clients, on-prem in a lot of instances, but cloud where we can and where we should.
Okay. Last one for you, open source or proprietary?
The answer is yes. We need both, and we need them to be symbiotic with one another. There's so much important work that's happening in the open source field, but you know, the progress and invention that's happening with our proprietary models is undeniable. The frontier is moving thanks to both of those fields and communities, and we need both of those.
Yes, we do need both, depending on the situation. Jeff, tell our listeners who are trying to set up a chief AI officer role or are trying to build out their AI capabilities, tell them about some of the key lessons you've learned in your amazing journey so far. And what advice would you like to give to these C-level leaders who are listening?
I think it's be bold in your strategy. Really understand or really think deeply about what AI can do for your organization. You know, what are the use cases that are obvious? What are the use cases that are not obvious? You know, where can you use AI to advance your organization's business? Where can you open up new product lines, new customer segments in your market? Where can you just do things better, more effectively? And I think wrapping a strategy around those questions or the answers to those questions is a really great place to start, because I think it's going to provide your vision, provide your clarity, but it also provides a roadmap for where you can derive value, where and how you can wrap responsible guardrails around that work. And that helps drive requirements down to all sorts of other elements of the organization, other stakeholders for that work. But really, starting with a strategy that's clear, that's compelling, that's a little bold, don't be afraid to lean in to what AI can do, even while we're still figuring this all out in our field. You know, I think one of the favorite people that I follow is Ethan Mollick. I think he's just doing amazing experimentation at Wharton and beyond with all of these frontier model capacities and understanding where and how they can increase your capacity individually and at the enterprise level. And I think using that as input to a strategy and being more iterative, so you can be bold, but be iterative to keep pace with the field, but also to put some clear markers in the ground of where you want to go as an organization. I think that's just a really critical place to start. I know it may even sound obvious, start with a strategy, but start with a strategy that's bold and compelling and clear, and is not afraid to use AI to do things differently or to do different things.
That's great. For our listeners who might be a little shocked that somebody who works for the government is talking about being bold, being aggressive, that tells you where the world has come, that the government is changing. And what he's suggesting is lean in, find the use cases, and don't be fearful about experimenting. Some will work, some won't work. I think it's a great message, Jeff. Thanks so much, Jeff, for joining us and sharing your invaluable insights on responsible AI, just across the board, about work culture, about what others can learn from your experiences and perspectives are incredibly enlightening. And I'm sure our listeners have gained a lot from this conversation. So thank you. And thanks to our listeners for tuning into the CIO podcast. Stay tuned for more conversations with leading minds in AI. And if you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review and subscribe and stay updated on future episodes. Until next time, keep exploring the frontiers of AI. Thanks so much, Jeff. This was great. There's so many other questions, as you know, I had, but we need to get you back again. So thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
Thank you.